Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
I'm Amira.
I'm JW.
And so this week, we wanted to first give a shout out to a very supportive fan of ours, a fan of the show. I don't want to say her whole name, but Monique has been really giving us a lot of love on social media. And we, what we do, like when we get Patreons, we make sure we call them out. And when we get, you know, just different types of support and, you know, reviews or whatever it is, she's in the streets, you know, throwing around Faith Uncut, telling people about the show, starting conversations. And we really appreciate it.
I mean, that's awesome.
Thank you.
So thank you, Monique. We may be in contact with you for something else later. But anyway, this week we're going to talk about, also thank you to Nick Gaines, who was with us for the past 2 weeks to discuss queer theology. We received a lot of great feedback on that show. So if anyone has anything to say, you know, notes, whatever, if it helped you, if you hated it, just let us know. I mean, it was a big show for us because we felt like it was a topic that we just had to wait until the right time to cover it. And Nick came in and helped us take care of that. And I loved how it came out. Yeah. I think we did some.
We did pretty good.
Appreciate you, Nick.
So this week, let's talk about Israel.
Let's talk about Israel.
This is a difficult conversation to have because I feel like it's had in a roundabout way in the church, almost like, and everyone is supposed to have an assumed position on this that's the same. And that position is basically side with Israel no matter what. Mm-hmm. And then once you get out into space with other people, maybe churched or non-churched, if you have a differing opinion, maybe you don't like something that is happening there, or you have a strong opinion about something that is not along the mainstream line of thought. Mm-hmm. You could be accused of being anti-Semitic, which makes the conversation difficult to have because on one end, you may have to feign a position that you do not have. And then on the other side, you risk being something that you may not be for the sake of having an intelligent conversation about it.
Right.
So that's what we're talking about today.
Well, first of all, when we think about Israel, it's important to consider that Israel is more than just a landmass. It is a population. It is an idea. It's a religious idea. It's an icon. So it's taken on this extremely important expression from religion to culture, now geopolitically, politically. So I just think it's important to kind of, we're not going to deep dive.
No, we're not.
We're not going to deep dive. But I was just thinking that, you know, policy-wise now, we need to think about how we talk about Israel, because Israel as a nation state needs to be able to be defined from Judaism. Mm.
Separate from Judaism.
From Judaism. Mm-hmm. They are not necessarily the same thing.
Correct.
Right? So
there are, just to be clear, in this conversation, we refer to Israel, the nation state, not so much Jewish people, because we acknowledge that there are more than Jewish people in Israel.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And that's part of the reason why the conversation is not automatically anti-Semitic. When you're talking about the nation state of Israel, you're talking about what happens, just as if you're talking about the United States or Germany or any other state.
Exactly.
So part of the reason we're having this conversation is because in Christianity, there's some false assumptions that we kind of wanted to address up front. Okay, so it has long been held that the conflict between Israel and Palestine is the result of a prophecy given in the very first book of the Bible, Genesis. Now, just to give a little background, the way the story goes, Abraham had a son, Isaac. Isaac had two twin sons when he was later in age, Jacob and Esau. Okay, so Jacob and Esau, there was a prophecy that the wife or the mother, Rebecca, had two nations in her womb. Mm-hmm. This is in Genesis chapter 25, I believe. 27, maybe. So it's tough because it's a really compelling story. So she's pregnant with these two twins. Esau is the oldest. It said that when he came out, the youngest, Jacob, was holding his heel. Now, for anyone who's seen a baby, their grip is not really that great. So I don't know what that really looks like, but that's
right,
how that conflict is portrayed. Mm-hmm. Like they were fighting in the womb. When they came out, one was grabbing the other. Okay, so the boys grow up. Esau becomes this hairy dude. Jacob becomes this, the Bible says, plain guy, whatever that means. So they go through life, they're always fighting, and Isaac, the father, when he gets older, his vision starts to deteriorate. And when he, like, close to the end of his life, he's giving, he plans to give Esau his blessing, or the birthright, the basically the inheritance mm-hmm. of the family. Mm-hmm. So what he says, Esau, go find me some game, and then come back, we'll have a feast, and I'll bless you with this birthright after this. Rebecca, who Jacob is her favorite son, Esau is Isaac's favorite son. Mm-hmm. So Rebecca hears this, Esau goes away to go hunting. Jacob, she gets Jacob and says, all right, look, let's get this deer, the sheep, and let's prepare this as game. And we're going to present this to Isaac like it's Esau. And so Jacob doesn't really look like Esau. Everyone knows Esau's hairy. Isaac can't see. So he puts on some of Esau's clothes so he smells like him, and some animal skin on his hands so he's kind of furry, I guess. Esau must have been really hairy.
It's a disguise.
Right. So they take the game in, and he presents it to Isaac, and Isaac hears Jacob speak, and he's like, wait a minute, you sound like Jacob. Come closer. So he comes closer. He touches him, and he's like, you feel just like Esau. So I don't know whether he felt like a deer or a goat or whatever, but he fooled Isaac into thinking he was Esau. All right. So then he blessed Jacob with the birthright. Now, I'm not going to pretend to know about the culture. It's no take backs, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
So at the end of this, or while this is happening, Esau comes back and catches the tail end of this, and he's like just pissed. Then Isaac realizes what happened, and he's pissed because he can't take it back now. He doesn't have anything to give to his firstborn son. And so that starts a conflict to the death of the two of these sons. Now, Jacob is later named in Genesis chapter 32. He's later renamed to Israel. Mm-hmm. And Esau is the father, the believed father of the Palestinians. And so the prophecy is, well, what's believed in Christian circles is that these two nations that are a result or descendants of these two brothers who were always fighting will always be fighting into eternity until God solves all of this. Mm-hmm. And so the Christian, particularly the Western Christian position, is you ally with Israel because Israel is God's chosen people in that conflict. And so that's why there seems to be almost a blind allegiance, not almost, but exactly a blind allegiance to this nation state of Israel because of these religious reasons.
Mm-hmm. And let's just be clear, that is the belief of most Western
Christians. Correct, not everyone.
Christians. Not all, mm-hmm. and candidly not. You'll find a fair number of Christians from other parts of the world that actually do not hold this belief. But to your point, there's a large number. I say that, right, because I never want somebody to think, I don't have that belief. So mm-hmm. what does that mean? Mm-hmm. That's kind of the point of what we're saying, right? It's okay to kind of come at this in any way. You just need to do it in some kind of holistic fashion, and you can't sugarcoat it.
If there are some things to consider. Yeah, there are some things to consider. I don't think with even that much detail in the, let's say, the biblical perspective of the prophecy, it's just not a lazy discussion of even that particular aspect of, you know, what is the rooting of the conflict, or, you know, how did this come to be, or how did this come to be the centerpiece of part of, let's say, a conservative section of the American population, mm-hmm. and how does it match up with a conservative section of the Israeli population that may also be mm-hmm. practicing Jews. So sometimes I just think things get distorted because it can be convenient to the point of, or as a result of, groupthink, where if you are in a faith body and they're not particularly challenging intellectually, then you'll get caught up in the rhythm of a story without ever connecting the fact that that religious story does have some historical rooting, mm-hmm. does have some, produces other data than what you're going to find in your Bible, if that makes any sense. So they're just other facets to bring to the conversation when you're talking about, you know, this area of the world, and when you're talking about a country that has policies, laws, whatever, whatever, and how those policies, laws, and systems interact with their people.
Right.
So we, as we move forward in the conversation about Israel and what's going on there and the conflict with Israel and Palestine, just it's important to note that in Israel, there are practicing Jews, mm-hmm. there are practicing Muslims,
yep.
there are practicing Christians, and there are people who practice other faith or no faith at mm-hmm. all. Mm-hmm. There's lots of people in this that are indirectly or directly in this space where this is happening. So we are not specifically speaking about the Jewish people or the Muslims or the Christians. We are speaking about Israel,
mm-hmm.
Israelis, and Palestinians. Yeah.
Because again, to the same point, all Palestinians are not practicing Muslims.
Right.
They have the same diversity. Right. But as a minority group existing in that system, there are certain things that are happening that I feel like critical thought will bring forth and ask you to make identify some commonalities and some differences that you see, let's say, happening between the people and the state. I think it's important to look at, because with more detail and with a little bit of discipline, and we've talked about this in previous shows, where you got to know what a primary source is. You got to be able to do research. You have to be able to process these thoughts on a higher plane. This is not a space that you just feel your way through. There's so much data available and so much historical information for your consumption that this is a bigger conversation than we support Israel because we are the church.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that's always the proper position.
No, that's the right way to look at it in terms of the way you laid it out, mm-hmm. right? I believe that we sometimes are sensationalizing or making Israel into a great Disney movie, and we make it sound as if everything is so super awesome about it, and it's nothing but Christians, right? It is somehow this.
Oh yeah, or nothing but Jewish people who love Christians.
Right, exactly, right? So it's somehow heaven on earth, so to speak.
No.
I'm not knocking it, right? Listen, at some point, yeah, I'd love to go to Israel, but I would also like to point out that it's not just the Christian who would find mm-hmm. some significance, historical context in Israel.
In going there.
It's not just the Christian, it's also the Jewish. It's also there are right. in the Muslim faith, there are also some important points of reference that exist inside of Israel. So sometimes we got to dig deeper than just this kind of sensationalized view of this is why we discuss it.
Right. So which takes me back to, you know, making sure that there is space to make these delineations and talk about these differences, because we don't want to snuff out critique and conversation under the guise of a statement being perceived as anti-Semitic because it might be critical
mm-hmm.
of a policy or a practice or an action taken by that particular nation state. The conversation can be had on that critical of a level. And it doesn't have to be had by religious people. So sometimes that makes things just not always subjective to religious interpretation. But it's kind of, you hear some of the same tenor in debate in our country, that if you take a particular stance, you're attacking Christianity. You're not. You're taking a stance that's contrary to what that point being represented in that far right political space. They'll take it as an attack on their religion when really you're attacking the policy that might have been created by, I guess, religious people.
See, y'all can tell we're being real careful with this because we understand how sensitive this is.
It's very, it is, but I just feel like it's not, what brought this topic up for us was, is a blind support of Israel by a church that serves people of color? Is that happening on a critical, based on critical thought and understanding of the nation state and actions it might carry out, versus this idea that we're going to support religiously this manifestation of Israel because we're Christians and that's what we are, either we do or we're told to do. Okay,
so since we're taking this brief moment to explain.
It's not brief anymore.
Yeah, I guess not. Yeah, true. Since we're taking this moment to explain kind of our thought process here, let me also make another higher level comment. I guess I've grown tired of watching people who get into this, well, you're attacking the faith. You're attacking Israel. You're attacking people of a Jewish faith. Sometimes you're actually just giving critical thought to a matter. And when you're giving critical thought, that leads you to questions. Mm-hmm. Just because somebody asks a question, disagrees with you, mm-hmm. calls something into question, doesn't actually necessitate an attack. It's okay. But if we're not willing to give critical thought, which at times will lead to disagreement, mm-hmm. then we're always going to sugarcoat topics in general, let alone something more substantive and complex like Israel.
Oh, man. We already know we're coming back to this. But I don't know. Can we got to peel back the layers.
Can I try to give a brief overview of how we arrived at this moment?
How did we get here?
Okay, so correct me wherever I misspeak or wherever I misrepresent is probably more accurate. All right. On or about the early 1900s, Jews that were not in this area began migrating back to British Palestine. This is after the fall of the Ottoman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so migration was curbed, and that led to, by the British, which led to the formation of this Jewish militia. All right, shortly after that, we have the Holocaust. All right, after that, the UN steps in and divided the land, giving part to the Jews, part to the Palestinians, creating two air quotes states. Okay, the Arabs pushed back, seeing that UN solution as more of a colonial solution, mm-hmm. that they weren't really on board with that, and they started a war. In that war, Israel won that one. Israel began pushing their borders because they had won the war beyond the limits of the
borders.
UN agreement. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the UN agreement was everything except Gaza and the West Bank. So now Israel is pushing into both of these areas. Okay, 1967, there's a 6-day war fought. And Israel won back Gaza and the West Bank. All right. The Palestinians are still there. So now you have a situation where you have Palestinians in a country that Israel is governing. Now, two groups who have been warring are now in the same space, and mm-hmm. Israel is charged with governing. And so you can understand how difficult that would be.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so 1978, the U.S. brokered the Camp David Accords, which was a peace treaty, and Israel agreed to give Sinai back to Egypt. All right, then the Palestinian Liberation Order, I believe,
mm-hmm,
the PLO,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They resumed the conflict. Israelis moved back to the land that they gave the settlers. Okay, so now Israel, you start to see these Israeli settlements in the land that was Palestinians in accordance with the Camp David Accords.
Mm-hmm.
And they just continued and ended up over 700,000 Israelis in this Palestinian space, which is the only Palestinian space left in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And this is West Bank and Gaza. And this is why you hear that so much in the news, because that was the result of the agreement. It was supposed to be Palestine's. Israel encroached upon it. And that's mm-hmm. just what's been happening since then. Hamas is born. They wanted to get rid of Israel. Then in 1993, you had the Oslo Accords, which mm-hmm. is another attempt at a peace treaty with the Palestinian Authority.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is how this conflict arose or got to the point where we are in modern times, through multiple peace treaties, wars, periods of non-conflict. And so we're here.
Mm-hmm.
Was I fair in that?
You were pretty fair. I mean,
okay, go ahead.
Like we said,
keep me straight.
Because you can get hours out of digging deeper into that timeline.
Okay.
But we don't have that type of time. But I think that's a pretty much fair assessment. I think that even with all that background, let's say you take the last, it's 2018. Let's say you take the last 30 or so years. What you will see is how much more important Israel moves into the center of a foreign policy strategy in the Middle East, where it becomes an outpost for U.S.-led, U.S.-supported policies mm-hmm. in that area. So it's not as clean as it could be,
mm-hmm.
right? So now we have examples now of good old-fashioned U.S. imperialism acting through, let's say, this one friendly ally at times in this area to kind of just keep an eye on, you know, U.S. interests and kind of have a different purview from, let's say, having to operate within another country's system where maybe their government is not U.S. focused or U.S. friendly. Now you have Israel kind of to collaborate with in that area. From that particular point, I can understand that on the international stage, dealing with them as an ally. We have allies all over the world, and yes, they are there to protect our access to markets, you know, our economic position, whatever the case may be. This becomes interesting when you look at the policies that are furthered in the name of, let's say, our alliance, and how some of those policies impact Palestinians, much like there are policies that exist in the United States that disproportionately impact people of color. Mm-hmm. And considering that we're talking about minority groups in both places,
right.
That political interaction is going to look a certain way anyway, because you're not always going to be able to have coalition on the minority side to further their interests all the time. We experience that all the time here. It forces the question, though, are our houses of faith the right place to promote those political positions that if they were here, they would undermine the quality of life for us as minorities, right? So I just feel like you sometimes don't get there if, first of all, that's not always the intent of bringing up Israel in the pulpit. But on the off chance that you are presented with a thought or an idea about the nation state, one, be able to discern that. Two, can you critique it? So if you don't appreciate gentrification in African-American neighborhoods because it is a manifestation of certain policies and certain actions that are taken by the state or by authorities mm-hmm. that end up artificially moving people around, how do you feel about settlements in disputed land areas?
Let me ask a question, though, for both of you, because I think I have my own answer, but I'll put this out here. You said something really fast just now. Paraphrase it, you basically said, let's say we're in church, we're discussing Israel, and then can you critique it? And then you quickly went to the nation state of mm-hmm. Israel. I personally think that there are too many times in the church where we do almost what you just did. Some people can't get to seeing Israel as a nation. Some Western Christians mm-hmm. can't get to seeing Israel as a nation state because we are still stuck on the fact, well, isn't this the same Israel that was in the Bible? And so to me, maybe I'm already answering. I didn't ask it. But that to me is the dilemma and the issue. You got to at first be able to say there is the Israel of the Bible.
Right.
What we are about to discuss is the nation state of Israel.
I've never had that conversation in church.
But that doesn't happen in church because, and this is why it's difficult to discuss Israel in church, because yeah. when you're talking about Israel, usually in a faith or a Christian context, Western Christian context, you're talking about Israel, God's people. You're not yep. talking about Israel, the nation state.
Yep.
So you can't just transition to Israel, the nation state, unless you explicitly say that, which is never said.
But that is
so
actually
always going to be.
That's my point.
Israel's God's people.
That's my point.
We're God's people.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's Israel's God's people. We're God's people. Yeah. You know,
I'm the person in the nation state. You know what I
right?
mean?
Yeah.
I'm not. It's not a critique.
But you almost feel like you have to do that kind of explanatory comma to go, all right, I'm not attacking God's people as outlined in the following passages of scripture. What I'm actually talking about is this nation state
right.
and the issues that exist here.
Or actions taken in the name of this nation state.
Sure.
Okay. Right. That should
sure.
be able to be.
Sure.
That should be able to be discussed. Mm-hmm. I think we're overusing the word critique, but discussed, toss some issues around, and then you might feel a certain type of way about this. You know, about, let's say, if you don't agree with, I was telling somebody earlier, I said, somebody toilet papers my house, right? I'm deeply inconvenienced. I'm embarrassed, and that is so rude. They toilet papered my house. My response is, I drove a car through their front window. Okay, now I bring that up to say sometimes people feel a certain type of way about Palestinian protests or conflicts, aggressive actions, but the response to them has been critiqued because it seems very heavy-handed. We are talking about the military.
Right.
We are not talking about God's people per se.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking
mm-hmm.
about the Israeli army or the Israeli military outfit
mm-hmm.
interacting with people that they feel like have attacked them, throwing
even
rocks.
even if those yeah. attacks are because you encroached upon our land that you agreed to not do.
Okay, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you agreed to not do, and there are nuances there, but what we're saying is now when you talk about, was it really necessary to, you know, bomb and create so many casualties, and you know, you had two people died over here, 270 died in response. Is there space to talk about an eye for an eye, or is there space to talk about, you know, I gave you 5, you gave me 20, without you
right.
taking my critique or my disagreement with that response as something fundamentally anti whatever you are?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like if Drake releases a song and then Pusha T just goes over the top.
Basically this.
Just napalms everything.
Basically this. Do you understand why I want to give Drake a hug?
I appreciate the reference. Appreciate the reference.
All right, so we're saying it's okay to have this conversation. Okay, so now that we've established that, what is the actual conversation? I believe that you summed it up now. We're just focusing on, because there's many elements, so many sides to this conversation. Mm-hmm. We're focusing on, as a person of color in, you're saying in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, as a person of color in the United States.
Who may or may not identify as Christian.
Correct.
Okay, I think that's important too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would make a difference because you wouldn't have...
So you're not going to have the same sensitivities, though.
Yeah, to Israel. You wouldn't have that.
That's true.
As a Westerner, you will not have, I feel safe in saying that. Yeah, as a yeah. Westerner, you would not have the same sensitivities right. if you are not
a Christian. Okay.
Right? So I'm not belittling it, but it's just, you won't have some
yeah,
of the same,
I'm definitely
I'll call
coming
it,
from
you won't have some of the same hangups. You just won't.
Or some of the same.
So let's say as a mm-hmm. person of one of the Abrahamic faiths in the United States.
Yes. Okay.
So that's mm-hmm. Islam, Christianity, Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
Does it align with your faith to take the position
that Israel can do no wrong?
Correct. I'll let you take that one first, JW.
Nice. So my answer is probably easy and offensive to some all at the same time.
Don't worry. I haven't gone yet.
No, it's fine. So ask the question one more time because I want to make sure I answer this the right way. Not the right way, but that I answer the question. Is it okay to have that belief?
Actually, I want to change that.
Go for
okay,
it.
Change.
Can you, as a person of one of those
mm-hmm,
faiths
mm-hmm.
who find their origin in that cradle, must you support Israel?
No matter what. I would say, no, you mustn't. Right. Because again, right, I think, and I guess I've already alluded to this,
mm-hmm.
There's a distinction made, right? There's the Israel, yes, God's chosen people of the Bible. I do believe that to be real. I will say that the Israel that we are discussing, that we see today, this nation state, here I go again explaining it, this nation state, it is not the same thing. Therefore, I do not necessarily align myself to this belief that, well, I have to agree with every policy decision of a nation state. Part of the reason why I say that is, listen, I'm here in America.
There are plenty
of people who are in Israel who are living through some of the things that we just highlighted. Their houses have been bombed. They have lost things as a result of a policy decision.
Family,
friends, any sort of loved one they've lost.
Yeah.
But let's be clear. We somewhat highlighted this. There are in Israel, there are obviously Jewish folks. There are Muslim folks, and guess what? There are Arab Christian folks who I would tell you and I would contend their belief system, not about God, but about the right, quote unquote, right or wrongness of Israel as a nation state mm-hmm. is going to look different than what most Western Christianers have Western Christians have imposed upon this
right.
view of Israel.
Right.
Therefore, all of that is just to say, for me personally, I don't think so. I don't mm-hmm. think that you have to. It's not like I'm going to hell because I'm not aligning myself
Amen.
To everything of a nation state.
All right, so I'll go next because I think you got the real answer. I'm just sitting here. Just
I don't have all the answers.
Okay, so when I see this, as I look at this conflict, and I laid out that outline earlier because that's the framework from which I'm approaching my mm-hmm. position. I see broken peace treaties, broken by one side consistently. This reminds me a lot of. Okay, so I have a framework of being a person of color in the United States, mm-hmm. and so as a black person in the United States, there's been some wrongs committed against black people. I'm familiar with that. I experience that every day. But I want to look at this from a slightly different aspect. I want to look at this from what happened in Dakota with the Dakota Access Pipeline. Mm-hmm. So in that situation, that reminds me more of this because the United States had basically an agreement with people that this is your space, this is your land, oh, we yeah. will not touch this land. And then when it became convenient for the nation, they decided to run a pipeline through their water supply. Mm-hmm. And that became an issue. Mm-hmm. And I saw why that was an issue because, I mean, when are you going to leave these people alone? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've taken everything from them and you've left them with these slivers of land, which I equate not, it's not a one-to-one, but like compared to Israel, Gaza in the West Bank is not the bulk of the land. Mm-hmm. So it kind of reminds me of that. You've left them with this. And even with this, you're in their space against their will. So that's the view that I take on this conflict, and that's why my position is, yeah, Israel's there's no way I'm supporting that type of movement against the people with that history of them. Like, this is land that they're supposed to have. This is land you agreed for them to have, and now you've been steadily increasing your settlement size for decades now, and so. Yeah, I think there's room to levy that, and we haven't used it in a while, that critique against the nation state of Israel.
It's my turn.
Go for it.
Yeah, so the short answer is no. It is not. I just don't think that it is a reflection of the ability to think critically to blindly support Israel and obscure its status as a secular nation state with however you might feel about the religious presentation of Israel in your experience. I think that it is a particularly precarious position for black churches to take a position of blind support for Israel, because without considering the parallels of Israel as a nation state and how it's different, how it interacts with its people in different ways, and look at those similarities for how the government and the state, if you will, interact with communities of color. So those interactions don't always happen on a peer level. Sometimes those interactions, they can look militaristic. They can look highly policed, highly high contact policing, where no matter what you do, no matter what your day consisted of, you might run into the state running into you, a checkpoint, being pulled over, being unjustly detained. These are things that are happening in our society that are also happening in other places all over the world. But when we consider how our government has taken a position of, let's say, 99.9% support of what Israel does as a nation state, it is extremely important to think about who has placed who in our government and who those power players are at this time. So I think they've been examples over the, say, even the last 10 years, the contrast between 45's administration and Barack Obama's 8 years in how Israel was treated. At that time, I think comparisons were made from corners that were particularly sympathetic to Israeli positions on issues, that maybe the Obama administration wasn't as supportive. But I don't think it was that. I think that it was the introduction of this critical thought that might have been missing from the conversation that sometimes gets hijacked by this evangelical right that has championed this thing, you know, championed this particular position. Now under 45, you have some very herky-jerky movements being made, not least of which is moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, right? Now, if you're sitting in your faith house on a Sunday And they're like, and those are God's chosen people. You got to understand that that move right there has very little to do with, like we said, the Israel of the Bible versus that outpost of U.S. policy, you know, supremacy in that area and those U.S. interests in that area. That is a very secular engagement. And I think our churches would do well either to encourage this level of discourse or more discourse and discussion, or just make sure that they are in very intentional about separating the two ideas, the religious idea of an Israel versus the nation state of Israel.
I think that's kind of a great summation point, right? That is the perspective you would hope that churches would take. Maybe more specifically to your point, churches mm-hmm. that are predominantly African-American or people of color.
Just serving right? communities of color, or serving communities where people have experienced marginalization or feel like they've experienced a group oppression. There are parallels that need to be. I think this is how you keep sheep from going to the slaughter. You educate them. Okay, you'll get killed in that room. Right. So we're not saying don't visit the country. We're not saying don't get to know the people. We're not saying don't, you know, interact. Let's say give them a fair shot at based on their humanity. What I am saying is that is like somebody coming here and saying, oh, yeah, the borders are open. Nobody's going to separate you from your kids. You know what I mean? They're going to put you up and, you know, you're going to have air conditioning and you're going to eat. It's going to be great. Everybody knows it's going down in certain places. Your neighbors are experiencing things that you would hope to never experience, right? It's the same thing. And if you would wanted somebody to say, you know, like in West Baltimore, when we had the shooting of the detective and everybody was like, oh my God, that's so terrible that the detective got shot. But there were other people who paid attention to the fact that it brought about a civil rights incursion on the people, where people couldn't move around without showing their IDs. There are people who live like that every day who are experiencing the blind support of people who say that they are of faith, that they, you know, and now we're getting into our doctrines and our theologies. Right. You love everybody and God loves everybody. And you, so we got to show ID when we get to heaven. I'm just asking. So if, cause I feel like it's all one, you understand what I'm saying? So if I find myself in the Valhalla section, okay, versus the paradise section of Islam, do I have to show my ID? Mm-hmm. There are people living like that. Mm-hmm. So I just think that, you know,
that's good.
Let's be able to have that conversation without somebody. I feel like that the anti-Semitism label gets thrown around, just like when you call somebody out for being a racist. They want to talk to you about why'd you label them versus the behavior that you're trying to label.
Yeah,
they want to talk about their feelings. They don't want to talk about their actions.
So we're not solving this today. We wanted to, and hopefully I think we did, introduce why this conversation is important, why this conversation can and must be had, especially in our faith spaces. So let's have it.
Let's have them.
Let's talk about Israel. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
I'm Amira.
I'm JW.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.